It's too early to tell if this reported decline will continue.
In other words, don't think the virus outbreak is coming to an end just yet. It is Wednesday, February 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also coming your way, questions remain about the decision to quarantine possible virus victims in a cruise ship. As businesses worldwide suffer from news of the coronavirus, New York's Chinatown takes action. And the Afghanistan election now has a winner. It's all coming your way on today's VOA Asia. Chinese health officials reported Tuesday the number of confirmed cases from a coronavirus outbreak has surpassed 72,000, with a death toll rising to nearly 1,900. The latest update included 98 more deaths and 1,886 new cases of the virus that has strained China's healthcare system and caused authorities to put areas on lockdown trying to stop it from spreading. The country's state television reported that one person who died from the virus Tuesday was Liu Zhiming, the director of the Wuchang Hospital in Wuhan, the capital of Hubei province that is the epicenter of the outbreak. The head of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, said Monday that Chinese data from recent days appeared to indicate a decline in new cases.
This trend must be interpreted very cautiously. Trends can change as new populations are affected. It's too early to tell if this reported decline will continue. Every scenario is still on the table.
Ghebreyesus also said more than 80% of patients have mild disease and will recover. The WHO said in its latest report on the virus, there were 794 confirmed cases outside of China. Some 454 cases have been passengers on a cruise ship under quarantine in Yokohama, Japan, including 88 new cases reported Tuesday alone. The United States said Monday it had evacuated more than 300 of its citizens and their immediate family members who had been on board the Diamond Princess. One flight carrying the passengers arrived early Monday at Travis Air Force Base in California, while another landed hours later at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. A group of 14 people who did not show symptoms but did test positive for the virus were permitted on the flights in an area isolated from the rest of the passengers. All of the evacuees are being held under quarantine for 14 days. There has been criticism of the decision to quarantine the travelers who have been or might have been affected by the virus on the Diamond Princess. WHO Executive Director Dr. Mike Ryan.
It's an unfortunate event occurring on the ship, and we trust that the authorities in Japan and the governments who are taking back people will be able to follow up those individuals in the appropriate way to ensure that they get the appropriate care if they are cases, and if not, that they are reintegrated into their communities. But yes, it will be very important to study this particular event and see what the issues have been that have led to transmission to the people who've been on that ship.
Meanwhile, the U.S. State Department is also looking into the case of a U.S. citizen who was diagnosed with the coronavirus after departing another cruise ship, the Westerdam, whose passengers tested negative for the virus before disembarking in Cambodia. Malaysian medical authorities said the passenger, an 83-year-old woman, twice tested positive for the virus upon arrival in Malaysia after showing signs of a viral infection, according to a State Department spokesman. She is the first person from the Westerdam to test positive. Her husband tested negative. The Westerdam and its 2,257 passengers and crew spent over a week at sea after its initial voyage, having been turned away by Japan, Taiwan, the Philippines, and Thailand over fears that someone on board had been infected with the coronavirus. The boat was finally allowed to dock in Cambodia last Thursday. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres hailed as a symbol of interfaith harmony an overland passage Pakistan recently opened for Sikh devotees from India to pay a visa-free homage to one of their holiest sites. The European Union has approved a trade agreement with Vietnam, its first with a developing Asian nation, disproving skeptics who thought Brexit and human rights concerns would delay the vote. The Beijing Auto Show, the industry's biggest global event of the year, is being postponed in response to the spread of China's new virus. President Trump signaled Tuesday via Twitter that he opposes efforts to block the sale of jet engines to China. This is VOA Asia. U.S. stocks fell in afternoon trading Tuesday after technology giant Apple became the most well-known company to warn of a financial hit from the virus outbreak in China. The maker of iPhone said revenue will fall short of previous forecast in the fiscal second quarter because production has been curtailed and consumer demand for iPhones has slowed in China. Apple stores there are either closed or operating on reduced hours. Businesses continue to feel the economic impact from the virus. The Beijing Auto Show, as we just told you, is being postponed indefinitely from its April date. Local businesses have been affected as well worldwide. The executive director of the Chinatown Partnership in New York City, Wellington Chen, spoke with VOA's Ashlyn Peter about the recent launch of his campaign called Show Some Love to Chinatown. Chen noted how successful the campaign has been since its Valentine's Day launch in bringing business back to the area following the coronavirus outbreak. Chen says that the improvement of community relations goes beyond the coronavirus, and this campaign serves to combat that.
I think it's not just the Asian Americans in America. I think it's now this has now become a global issue. There is a cultural divide. For example, just a simple test of wearing a mask, for example, in the Far East, it's quite normal to wear a mask even on a perfectly normal day. And so that is something that is a accepted culture, to be polite. But here is being misinterpreted in a different context. And that's just one illustration. But this is now a global issue in terms of, you know, how come you're not wearing a mask when you're next to me? And that has turned into a very, very tension-filled situation.
So with the launch of this campaign, what kind of feedback have you received from the public and from business owners in Chinatown?
I was in one restaurant the night before the launch of the Promotion for Love campaign, and on Valentine's night, it was just like a zoo. It was a madhouse. And I was absolutely delighted to see all these couples, and also they take their elders to come down to Chinatown. And it's just a cross-section of diverse people that came into this one restaurant where the night before I was being interviewed by another TV station, and it was a ghost town. It was absolutely, the whole dining hall is empty, and not mention the upper level. And on the night of Valentine's Day night, it was just the multiple rounds of table on multiple levels. The upper floor was filled, downstairs was filled, and then the people had to wait in line. And that was the only one down the block. The restaurant was also filled. But the idea is more of a rallying call to highlight. And I'm so glad that Chicago Chinatown is trying to copy this idea. I think that they're showing the theme of love. And so you can interview them as well after this. But I can also say that we are very proud that when the coronavirus news first sprung out, there were a whole bunch of series of nothing but medical conferences that scared the daylight out of everyone. You know, even though all the officials, including myself, trying to reassure them there have been no cases, this thing is not contagious, that message was not getting through. So I emphasized to another official they were about to have the sixth medical conference about, you know, press conference about corona. I said, please don't. I said, please, from now on, encourage everyone, all the officials, all the government officials, all the leaders, all the public, to come down here and put your money where your mouth is. Just come down there and have a good time. And the next day, it started happening. So we are delighted that, you know, the simple turn of our idea, rather than talk about coronavirus, into just coming, and the hashtag is called Dying in Chinatown, and support Chinatown, that turned now into a movement. And I'm absolutely delighted that idea has taken hold.
What do you see for the future of the campaign?
The campaign has to be ongoing because this thing is not going to go away anytime soon. The fear is still there, and the misunderstanding is still there. So only leading by example that more people, I cannot ease all the anxiety for all the people, so the recovery will take some time. But we do believe that every bit helps, and so any one extra person that we can encourage to come down here is one extra income that the local merchant group will deeply appreciate.
Wellington Chen, the executive director of the Chinatown Partnership in New York City, speaking with VOA's Ashlyn Peter. Happening now in Asia, a half-kilometer brick wall has been hastily erected in India's Gujarat state ahead of a visit by U.S. President Donald Trump, with critics saying it was built to block the view of a slum area inhabited by more than 2,000 people. Make sure you stay up to date with VOA. You are listening to VOA Asia. We are very happy you're with us. Australia is preparing to evacuate more than 200 of its citizens from the coronavirus-hit cruise ship, the Diamond Princess, in Yokohama, Japan. They'll face 2 weeks in isolation on their return home. Also, the first group of Australian coronavirus evacuees from the Chinese city of Wuhan has been released from quarantine. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Diamond Princess has been in quarantine since February 3. On board the cruise liner have been about 3,700 passengers and crew, including dozens of Australian tourists. It is the largest cluster of infections outside China, where the virus was first reported. Australian passengers must decide Tuesday if they'll take up their government's offer of an evacuation flight out of Japan. Authorities in Canberra are planning to fly them home on Wednesday. They will all go into isolation for 14 days, in addition to the time they've already spent confined on the Diamond Princess. In a recorded message to passengers, Australia's Chief Medical Officer Brendan Murphy said such precautions were essential.
There is evidence of ongoing further infections in the ship, in the crew, and in some passengers. Even though we think some of you probably have been well quarantined, there is uncertainty about whether some of you may be incubating the virus, and if you came back into the Australian community, you may expose your family or other members of the community to this infection.
Two planes carrying hundreds of US citizens from the cruise ship in Japan have arrived back home and will face 14 days in isolation. However, some American travellers have refused to be evacuated, preferring to wait until the ship's official quarantine comes to an end on February 19. The first group of Australian coronavirus evacuees from the coronavirus epicentre at Wuhan, China, has been released from quarantine Monday from Christmas Island in the Indian Ocean. More than 200 Australians were flown home, while other evacuees remain in isolation at a former miners' camp near the city of Darwin. There are currently 15 cases of the disease in Australia. Health officials say 8 patients are reported to have recovered, while the other 7 are in a stable condition. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Make sure you stay with us. Coming up, some tidbits you might not have heard about the making of the winner of this year's Academy Award Best Picture Oscar winner. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. Pakistan said Monday that Indian mortar fire wounded at least 10 civilians when it crashed into homes in the Pakistani-administered side of the Kashmir region. In a statement, the Pakistani army said it fired back in response to the unprovoked ceasefire violations, killing one Indian soldier and wounding three others over the past 24 hours. This is Business Scene. I'm Ira Melman. It is a tale of two South Korean families, the wealthy Parks and the poor Kims, mirroring the deepening inequality in Asia's fourth largest economy. South Korea's Academy Award-winning Parasite used a range of visual cues to tell its story of suffocating class struggle through the sights of Seoul. A tour of the locations in the film reveals the unique meanings they have for many South Koreans as they engage in their own debates about inequality in the country. Much of the movie was shot on purpose-built sets, but both the Parks mansion and the Kims' squalid sub-basement apartment were inspired by real neighborhoods in the South Korean capital. Ayeondong is one of the last shanty towns near downtown Seoul and made an appearance in several scenes depicting the Kims' humble neighborhood.
It's definitely a neighborhood that isn't faring well. Watching the film made me feel like they put my life right in there.
In contrast, the scenes around the wealthy Park's fancy home, which itself was a movie set built elsewhere, were filmed in Sunbukdong, known as South Korea's Beverly Hills. According to real estate brokers, the homes in Sunbukdong usually cost around 6 billion or 7 billion won. Those that are rented to foreign diplomats are offered for 10 million to 15 million won per month. In the intimate subterranean surroundings of a cramped basement room, the five members of Monsters Dive took part in a battle of the bands before a small audience, mostly seated, until frontman Chu Yan-sik ordered them to their feet. "Are you ready?" screamed the 25-year-old nursing student, transformed into a fist-pumping alter ego leaping around the tiny stage as if he were gracing a large-scale arena. Head banging away in the shadow of a multi-billion dollar K-pop industry, South Korea's axe-wielding heavy metal bands shred a modest trail of destruction. With trendy student areas increasingly being taken over by chic cafes and karaoke joints, Seoul's metal subculture is largely confined to unremarkable venues that are often literally underground. Even their larger gigs will only bring the band around $350, which, along with proceeds from merchandise sales, they put toward rehearsal rooms, recording sessions, and music video production to maintain their presence on various social media platforms.
Financial reasons were why most of the previous band members left. They could not make a living by playing music.
Parental approval and support can be vital for metalheads who are in it for love, not money. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman. This news break from VOA Asia, Cambodia's leader urged people Thursday to remain calm about the new virus from China while threatening to kick out reporters or officials seen wearing a face mask. Prime Minister Hun Sen said in a live televised address that people should not be scared because the real illness they face was fear based on inaccurate information or social media. Now on VOA Asia, Afghanistan declared incumbent Ashraf Ghani the winner of a disputed presidential election on Tuesday, almost 5 months after voting took place in September.
5 months after a disputed presidential election, Ashraf Ghani has been declared the winner of Afghanistan's presidential poll. The Independent Election Commission said on Tuesday that Ghani won 50.64% of the vote. His former deputy and main rival, Abdullah Abdullah, was named runner-up with 39.52%. The IEC announced preliminary results in December, which saw Ghani win re-election by a slim margin. But Abdullah dismissed the result as fraudulent and called for a full review. Ghani rejected the allegations. A potential political crisis is looming as the United States and the Taliban near an agreement in Doha, which officials on both sides say could be announced soon if an initial reduction in violence is successfully observed. Afghanistan's acting interior minister said that the reduction would be enforced within 5 days. The agreement is set to pave the way for crucial intra-Afghan talks between the political leadership and the Taliban. The militants have so far refused to talk to the government.
Reuters' Emmer McCarthy reporting. Naomi Pomeroy is a young and successful chef working in Portland, Oregon. When she got into the business, she knew it was traditionally dominated by men, but that didn't stop her at all. Today, she is an award-winning professional, owner of a restaurant simply called Beast. She's also the author of a cookbook and a television personality. Karina Bafrodzian met with the chef to learn her story.
Naomi Pomeroy's restaurant called Beast has been feeding locals and tourists of Portland, Oregon for over a decade. Since she opened Beast, Pomeroy's life changed dramatically. She made the way from an amateur who cooked with her mom and grandmother to a professional chef.
When we open this place, it'll be open like 3 to 6 months and then it'll shut down, and I had no expectations. It wasn't like afraid, but I never thought that it would be like the kind of success that it was. Because I had never been like an actual chef before. I had run a catering company, and you know, I had worked in restaurants for my whole life, but I had never had my own place, writing my own menu, training my own staff.
Pomeroy's restaurant is not very big, and the kitchen is open so that customers can see how their food is being prepared. There are just two large communal tables, so diners share the space and sit next to the people they don't know. But that doesn't seem to bother anyone. Good food and wine are supposed to bring people together. Every 2 weeks, Pomeroy creates a new menu after lengthy discussions and testing sessions with her team. And the line of people waiting to try her food suggests she's doing a great job. The collection of awards she has received tells the same story. Among them, the James Beard Award for Best Chef, the Oscar of restaurant business. But it wasn't always easy being a woman chef.
I remember when I got off the plane to go to Aspen Food and Wine for the first time, and somebody asked me if I was a chef, and I said, yeah, I'm a chef and owner of this restaurant called Beast in Portland, and they go, oh, are you a pastry chef?
Today, she's well known and recognized in the industry. She's still working tirelessly at the Beast while also writing cookbooks, mixing and inventing cocktails, and being a TV personality. But despite her culinary success, it's the feeling you get from her restaurant that she cares most about.
My biggest goal, you'd be surprised, is not about like just the food on the plate or just the customers coming back. It's really like, are we having fun? Like, are we listening to good music and having good conversation during the day? Do we know our farmers? Like, do we feel proud of what we're doing? You know, so it's way bigger than just sort of like just a restaurant, you know? So my favorite part is just making people happy, but that includes me and my staff.
Pomeroy has no plans to move from Portland. It's the town where she found a like-minded team and where she's raising her family. Yet she hopes to open one more restaurant in the city so that more people can be well-fed and happy. Karina Bafrodzian for VOA News, Portland, Oregon.
This is Science in a Minute.
A 2012 Harvard Medical School-led study linked grief over losing a close loved one, such as a spouse, child, or parent, with a higher risk of a heart attack, which some refer to as a broken heart. The study proposed that this risk increased to 21 times higher than normal within the first day of a loss, almost 6 times higher within the first week, but dropped steadily over the first month to about 6 months. A new Australian study suggests the combination of a beta-blocker blood pressure medication and an aspirin could reduce the risk of a bereavement-induced myocardial infarction. Lead author Jeffrey Toffler, a professor at the University of Sydney, says his team found that the medication used in a low dose once a day successfully reduced spikes in blood pressure and heart rate, as well as provided positive changes in blood clotting tendency, all contributing factors to a heart attack. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Some reminders here. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Why not visit our VOAnews.com program page? See us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. And let us hear from you on VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thank you for being with us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter. Our engineer today was Chung, and the managing editor of VOA Asia is Diane Gao, and our team is Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Enjoy the day.